The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM.
Over the weekend, a literary trailblazer died. One of the greatest ever Irish writers, Edna O'Brien, also set the way for the likes of the Sally Rooneys, Anne Enright's, Emma Donoghue's to come afterwards, and did so at a time when Ireland was not receptive to many of the novelists who told the essential truths about this country. We're going to be talking to two people who knew her. Lara Marlowe, very well known to you here on the programme, who of course is a journalist and an author based out of Paris, but who also interviewed Edna O'Brien in her later years. And Sinead O'Shea, who you've also met on this programme previously, who's currently making a documentary about the life of Edna O'Brien. But let's hear a little bit first of when she was on Desert Island Discs on the BBC back in 2007 and how she explained there was little for her to read when she was growing up as a child at County Clare.
The church and religion were everywhere in your childhood. What about books? Were books ever present?
No, books were not present at all. There was prayer books and there was a Mrs. Beaton's cookery book, much stained, you know, egg yolk and all that. And then my father was a man for the horses. There was bloodstock manuals. But there was one copy of Rebecca that had circulated into Scariff and Tomb Graney.
And so Tomb Graney was the village near.
The village near. Yes. And it was loaned. And it was loaned by the page, not consecutive. So you might get page 204 and then get page 1. And that was the only story.
And yet, Sinead, I believe she started writing at the age of 8.
Yes, apparently so. I love the stories about the pages of the books being shared around Tomb Graney. She says she began to write her first stories actually on the bark of the tree, and she would create fairy stories and stories about escape of all sorts.
What attracted you to making a documentary about her?
I interviewed her for an American magazine about 10 years ago, and I didn't really know much about her beforehand. And then I read Country Girls, and I guess I couldn't believe how good it was. I had always thought she was a bit, I suppose I'd been told she was really frothy and, you know, just not a very engaging writer. And then I read it, and I was quite electrified. And then I met her, and I don't know if you've ever met her, but she's, I mean, I think she might be the most charismatic person who ever lived. She's just very funny, very compelling, very dramatic. So I guess I always kind of dreamt then of trying to make a film about her.
Lara Marlowe, you had a similar experience of her charisma, did you?
Yes, I did. 2 years ago, the Irish Times asked me to travel from Paris to London to interview her about her new play about Joyce's women. And so I took the Eurostar. First of all, she posted the play to me in a big envelope. And when I opened it, the typescript of the play was inside, and it was bound with a grey satin ribbon that had purple ink spilled all over it. She always wrote in purple ink, like Virginia Woolf. But when I arrived at her little house, I rang the doorbell and waited and waited and waited, and she finally. I was getting very worried, and finally I rang her. She said she hadn't heard the doorbell, and then it took her quite a while to get to the door. She was extremely frail. She was 92 then, and we went and sat in her kitchen for a very long time. There was a portrait of, I think it was one of John Minahan's photographs of Samuel Beckett, above the kitchen table, sort of staring down at us. And it was very, very hot in the kitchen. I couldn't figure out why it was so hot. I mean, it was a hot summer day, but still. Finally, we went upstairs and sat in her study for, I must have spent about 3 hours with her, and just listening to her was so entrancing that I couldn't really tear myself away. And finally, I said to her, look, I've got to catch the Eurostar back to Paris. I'm really sorry. And she said, oh, but you didn't have lunch. And she sort of forced me to eat something in the kitchen, some cheese and biscuits or something. And I said to her, Edna, it's just so hot in here. And it turned out she'd left the grill on in the oven, and that's why it was so very hot. And I said, this is really dangerous. You could burn the house down, you know, be careful. And that kind of summed up to me, I think in old age in particular, but maybe throughout her life. She was not very good at the sort of practical details of turning the oven on and off and remembering those sorts of things. But when she started to talk about literature, about James Joyce or about her own oeuvre, she was amazing. She spoke with incredible precision. She was one of the most articulate people I ever met. She thought about what she was going to say before she said it. And she said it beautifully, like a stage actor.
But Laura, and I think Sinead there said that there maybe is generations of Irish people not familiar with her work, because it was controversial in the 1960s. It was banned by the Catholic Church and by the state. In fact, there were even book burnings. Her own mother was scandalised by Country Girls. And yet in recent years, there's been maybe an appreciation in Ireland has developed of just how significantly and how highly she has been regarded internationally as one of the great writers who've emerged from Ireland in the 20th century.
Yes, and I'm glad that she felt that recognition. That I was at the opening night of her play at the Abbey Theatre 2 years ago, and President Higgins and Mrs. Higgins were there, and she got a standing ovation. And like all writers, she really needed that. She needed the praise. And when I interviewed her before the opening night, she said she was very worried and she thought she might be booed. And I said, no, don't be ridiculous. You know, they're not going to boo you. And she said, a writer never knows. And it was almost as if she was on the verge of tears or something, the way she said it. So I think she really needed that praise and that reinforcement, although not to the point where she would ever have altered her own behavior or her own writing to achieve it. I think she must have realized to what an extent she had changed Ireland and changed what it was possible to say and write about in Ireland.
Yeah, tell us a little bit maybe, Sinead, about the content of the books and why it was that they scandalised Ireland in the 1960s, but in reality it was holding up a mirror to this ourselves in the way that we wouldn't actually deal with at the time.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think Laura makes a brilliant point there that, you know, though she was very hurt by this treatment, she didn't waver, you know, she did keep going. I think the Country Girls, in retrospect, you know, in terms of its sexual content, it was fairly tame. You know, there's a deflowering at the end that is literally invoking orchids. You know, that's the kind of terminology that's being deployed. I suppose maybe the darker truth that it was revealing was how paternalistic Irish culture was and how negative that could be for women. There was a real emphasis on how women were so fragile within the sexual economy of the times. The alcohol was so prevalent, older men could do as they wished. So I think the sexual content was held up as the issue, but I also think it had so much to say about gender relations too, and that was very problematic. The controversies evolved, though, with Edna. You know, she was controversial throughout the 60s for her portrayals of Ireland, and then in the 1990s she became notorious again, I suppose, for the State of the Nation novel she wrote, beginning with House of Splendid Isolation, in which she was accused, I suppose, of being sympathetic to the Republican cause, which at the time was a very problematic position to take.
And of course, she left Ireland in the 1960s and was only a sporadic visitor to the country after that, was she?
Yes. I mean, she did buy a house briefly in the late 90s in Donegal, and I don't think that went so well, more for a variety of planning issues she faced. But no, I think after that she was a very frequent and regular visitor, but she was based in London full time.
Okay, and of course, Laura, she also was a great hostess in her home in London and something of a party animal. So let's just hear a little bit from a 2012 interview in The Guardian on the publication of her memoir, Country Girl, when Edna O'Brien was asked about the parties she held.
I have lived life to the full, but my interior life is where I live life, and it's far more central to me than the external life, and that's because I'm a writer.
Was there not pressure on you, though, to put more famous people in? I mean, you've got...
No,
you know,
I did
so
put
many
famous
people
in one section, and some people objected. You know something? You can't please everyone. And I put them in very deliberately, like the contrast between my life in the sort of Jane Eyre type imprisoning. Well, first the childhood and then marriage, and then this leap into, you know, big time or whatever it's called, and all the people who came through the door and for whom I cooked lavishly and opened bottles lavishly. But I also knew it wasn't my real life. It was part of my outer life, and we were all, including those people, Rory Lang, Sean Connery, all of them, were all also in transit.
Lara, the house that you visited her in Knightsbridge or Kensington, whichever it was, I think was a rented house, but she had, before she lost it because she was hopeless with money, had a six-bedroom house, I think, in Chelsea, which was full of the wildest, best parties, apparently.
Marlon Brando and Richard Burton and Jane Fonda and Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney sang lullabies to her sons. V.S. Naipaul, Jackie Onassis, Vanessa Redgrave. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Basically, anyone who is anyone in entertainment or literature went to her parties, and she didn't write for 10 years, and she called it her reckless period. And when I said that, you know, her play would go down well in Dublin, and she expressed this sort of insecurity about it, she kind of criticized the writers who are what she called publicity hounds. She said that she knew a lot of writers who destroyed their own talent by becoming so social, she called them, and she said it was tosh. And that I brought up Carlisle Square and her six-bedroom house, and she said she didn't regret it. She said it was all part of the trip.
And what a trip it was. What a life she led, and what a great canon of work she's left behind her as well. The late Edna O'Brien. Thank you so much, Lara Marlowe and Sinead O'Shea, for being with us today.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.